presentation on making sense of your user experience options. My name is Jim O'Neill, and I'm a developer evangelist for Microsoft in the Northeast District, covering New England and upstate New York. This is a presentation I delivered during our Northeast Roadshow series in the fall of 2008. To give credit where credit is due, the inspiration for this presentation was a session given by Brad Noyes at the 2008 TechEd conference in Orlando. As you probably have already realized, there is no shortage of options when building client user experiences with .NET, and there are certainly a host of books, podcasts, online and offline training materials covering the various techniques. My goal here, though, is not so much to dive deep into any one technology, but rather survey the landscape of options, identify similarities and differences in the approaches, offer some insight into where Microsoft's emphasis for the future lies, and finally to provide some resources to guide your implementations, regardless of the technologies you choose. Hopefully this information will enable you to better navigate the maze of options that are out there. If you have the luxury of building new applications these days versus maintaining or porting existing ones, the first crossroads you reach in deciding upon a client implementation has historically been Windows, namely desktop, or web, meaning ASP.NET. It's an obvious question to ponder, but is it the right one? One of the driving factors for a web application has been availability and ubiquity. IT departments love these solutions because they need only set up and configure the application once on a web server. And since everyone has a browser, often the same browser, it was a deployment dream. For the end user experience, though, not so much. Trying to get the best of both worlds is where the concept of smart clients arose. With smart client technology, an application is built to run natively on the target machine, not in a browser, but is distributed through browser-like mechanisms such as protocols like HTTP and FTP. Microsoft's click-once technology is the prime example of this hybrid approach. Given the existence and widespread adoption of these click-once type technologies, I submit that the question is not really Windows versus web, but rather smart client versus browser-based. So let's begin there at that higher level before talking about the individual Microsoft client offerings that roughly fit under one or sometimes both of those categories. What then are the driving factors for making the decision between smart client and web? Here's a few of them. To what degree does the full complement of the client computer need to be used? File systems, graphics, external devices, and so on. What control of the client platform does the application require, and what degree of interactivity does the end user community require? Does the app demand the processing power of a desktop, or can it function on a second generation dumb terminal, namely a browser? What is the client expectation for responsiveness? Are the vagaries of network performance important? What if network access is cut off altogether? Is offline capability a requirement? And don't underestimate the skill set. After all, building software is part of a business. So while we'd perhaps all love to use the leading edge technologies, there's a learning curve, and there will always be internal pressure to minimize time to market, which often equates to go with what you know. To break out of that cycle, it's typically incumbent on you to show why learning technology X or Y and applying it to your next project makes good business sense. Let's take a look at a typical smart client architecture. One commonly used approach is to separate your system into three distinct layers or tiers. The client application, your UI of course, the middle or business logic tier where most of your customized application logic should reside, and finally the data tier consisting of your back-end data store like SQL Server 2008. Your client tier and business tier may be one and the same, like in a client-server application, or perhaps your client tier talks to the business tier through some type of services approach, like Windows Communication Foundation. In the data tier, you may choose traditional ADO.NET techniques, or perhaps the new ADO.NET Data Services technology, which provides a RESTful, service-based approach to data access. So what are some of the advantages of this smart client approach? Well, in general, it can provide a better user experience because you have the full hardware of the client operating system to bring to bear, not just the facilities exposed by whatever browser might be hosting an alternative web-based approach. You may also potentially have complete access to the file system, external hardware, and so on, depending on the security zone under which the application is running. And since the application is running on the client machine, concerns for scalability are minimized. The application can maintain its own state locally, and perhaps lots of it. Heck, you have at least 2 GB of virtual memory you can fill up. Not having to be ultra-conservative makes for a much easier development experience than building a scalable, stateless web version of the application. Now, what are the cons? Well, they follow directly from the pros. Along with providing access to the underlying machine is the concern for security. What, for instance, happens if a smart client application with a bug or a virus is able to delete files on the local machine? Some of that can be mitigated with security configurations. A smart client application, for instance, will run in a sandbox from the click-once cache, and file access can be restricted to isolated storage, but that introduces complexity and limits the ability to harness the full power of the desktop. Now let's take a look at a canonical browser-based application scenario. Here the number of tiers is extended from 3 to 4. The business and data domains remain, and with a certain bit of foresight, can service both browser-based and smart client users alike. In the browser-based approach, the client block is now split, and the actual client software is simply a browser, Internet Explorer, or perhaps Firefox, Opera, or Safari. The application code itself is deployed and resides on the web server layer, in the Microsoft world as an ASP.NET application running under IIS. This, of course, makes deployment and updates a relative cakewalk for the IT department and significantly broadens the reach of the application. IT does, however, have some work to do in terms of securing the site, perhaps with a DMZ, firewalls, proxies, and so on, since now an application failure or security breach can affect vastly many more than a single user. Likewise, in this model, the development staff must be much more conscious of performance and scalability, since many end users are vying for the same server resources. Lack of a stateless implementation or even a minute memory or resource leak can quickly accumulate on a busy 7x24 server and perhaps result in an expensive downtime for the business. On the client end, the user experience is typically degraded from a smart client counterpart. Right off the mark, a disconnected mode is not an option. Additionally, the application's capabilities are necessarily limited by the capabilities of the encompassing browser, which can also vary from vendor to vendor, and the application can't make direct use of other resources on the local machine, for good reason, of course. Historically, the shortfall in user experience has been ameliorated via the use of additional technologies, both open and proprietary. Approaches like AJAX and plug-in technologies such as Flash and Silverlight, or their ancestors, Java applets and ActiveX components. So how do you pick your poison? Well, it's rare that there will be a black-and-white decision, and you'll have to prioritize your high-level application requirements, reach versus rich behavior, online versus offline access, and so on to narrow the field. And in many cases, the answer may be both. You may have an internal-only site focused on the core business and an external-facing site providing the reach to your end users, especially in services industries. Let's now take a close look at the primary Microsoft technologies in the two application categories we've discussed. For smart client applications, we're going to look at Visto, Visual Studio Tools for Office, Windows Forms, and Windows Presentation Foundation. For browser-based, we'll focus on ASP.NET and Silverlight. One way to build a client application experience, but perhaps not the first you would consider, is to leverage the existing rich UI of Microsoft Office applications such as Word, Excel, and Outlook. For a line of business application whose targeted users are information workers in your client's company, this option makes a lot of sense. Their user base is likely well versed in the usage of Microsoft Office applications, and they perhaps spend most of their working hours in one or several of the components of the Office suite. Why create an entirely new interface when you can use .NET code, not VBA of the past, to extend the Office suite with custom programming? Access back office assets like SharePoint and SQL Server, and leverage WCF to bring the requisite data directly to the point of action. It's not a solution that fits all scenarios, but it is compelling for certain line of business applications, so much so that Microsoft has come up with another three-letter acronym, OBA, Office Business Applications, and dedicated a website, obacentral.com, to tout the advantages of the technology and to highlight real-world implementations of OBAs. Mark Twain once said, "The rumors of my death are greatly exaggerated." So it goes for Windows Forms. Granted, Windows Forms is a mature technology, and Microsoft has already gone on record to say that you should not really expect any significant enhancements. That said, the .NET 3.5 release did actually include several items of interest to benefit Windows Forms applications, such as improvements to Click Once functionality, client application services, allowing Windows applications to leverage logins, profiles, and roles provided in AJAX 2.0 web extensions, and WPF interoperability, facilitating an incremental approach to WPF adoption. The maturity of Windows Forms and its native Win32 predecessor, the depth of developer expertise, as well as the ecosystem surrounding Windows Forms, arguably still give it an edge over WPF in terms of time to market. A member of the Microsoft Patterns and Practices team even stated on his blog last October that WinForms is the recommended breadth solution for line-of-business application development for the foreseeable future. Now that may seem to fly in the face of building momentum for WPF, but taken in context, the statement points to the same type of maturity arguments I just mentioned. There's a definite learning curve, and moving to WPF because it's the new thing on the block doesn't make good business sense. And don't forget, there is interoperability between Windows Forms and WPF, so an incremental migration, perhaps new features are implemented in WPF, is absolutely a credible and viable strategy. And if that's not enough, let's get down to dates. On the Microsoft site for product life cycles, we can see that .NET 3.0, 3.5 isn't even on the list yet, reaches an end of mainstream support in 2012 and the end of extended support in 2017. And well, since Windows Forms is an integral part of the .NET framework, there's obviously plenty of life left in Windows Forms. Windows Presentation Foundation is the newest smart client technology from Microsoft, having been introduced in early 2007 with the release of the .NET Framework 3.0. The most noticeable feature of WPF is, of course, the stunning graphical capabilities that can be achieved by virtue of the use of DirectX as the rendering engine. DirectX, formerly the domain of advanced visualization and game developers, hits the mainstream here, enabling developers to support presentation features that were very difficult, if not impossible, using Windows Forms and its underlying GDI and GDI Plus graphics subsystem. Early press on WPF understandably focused on the glitz of animation, 2D and 3D facilities, styling, and document presentation and layout capabilities. But early adopters were a bit frustrated by the challenges of development, including the learning curve. WPF applications are indeed wired differently, and to effectively leverage the technology requires understanding the underlying content and event model. Additionally, developers weren't provided the same level of designer support in Visual Studio or the richness of custom controls that they were accustomed to in Windows Forms. As the technology has matured, however, these roadblocks to success continue to disappear. With the .NET 3.5 SP1 release, for instance, there have been significant improvements in data binding capabilities, as well as graphic improvements in the area of rendering speed and data scalability. The WPF Data Grid, part of the WPF Toolkit on CodePlex, and WPF Ribbon have also recently made an appearance. And of course, the third-party control markets, such as Telerik, Infragistics, and Exceed, have made a lot of progress in building the WPF ecosystem. The Visual Studio development environment has also had some productivity improvements, and an entire new suite of products, Expression Studio, has been launched to enhance the designer experience when building WPF applications. In fact, one of the truly differentiating features of developing applications with WPF is the interaction of the developer and the user interface designer. When dealing with Windows Forms or ASP.NET applications, the typical cycle of development and design involved a user interface designer generating visual layouts using drawing tools such as Adobe Illustrator or Quark Express. They'd throw these wireframe renderings over the cubicle wall at the developers who would try to implement the design. Rarely was this a one-shot process, and this scenario would repeat itself many times before design and implementation converged into a final product. With WPF development comes a unique hybrid development and design experience made possible through the usage of XAML, Extensible Application Markup Language, as the basis for interface design as well as for animation storyboarding and data binding. XAML is an XML language supported not only by Visual Studio's WPF designer, but also by Expression Blend, an application targeted toward professional user experience designers. Visual Studio and Expression Blend open the same Visual Studio project space, so changes made by developers can be immediately used by designers, and changes made by designers automatically are absorbed into the Visual Studio solution space. No more passing notes and diagrams over cubicle walls, and the result is a significantly more streamlined workflow. One of the biggest criticisms you may hear about WPF is that it's just not ready for developing business applications. This perception is perhaps deserved since the initial emphasis was indeed on improved graphics, and demos with rotating spheres and other eye candy were the norm. Despite the advancements in developer experience and the availability of business-like widgets, there's still considerable debate in the blogosphere about the readiness of WPF for line-of-business applications. Granted, there are definitely challenges in building any type of WPF application, learning curve being a significant one. But despite the challenges, there are a considerable number of WPF applications out there supporting various business domains, in addition, of course, to the more consumer-focused applications for recognized brands like Nike and North Face. What you've seen is just a sampling of them, in no particular order, cutting across a variety of business domains. Now that we've covered the workstation client options, Visto, WinForms, and WPF, let's move on to some of the browser-based options available with Microsoft technologies today. The first is the ubiquitous ASP.NET. ASP.NET is pretty much today's web analog of thick client WinForms, and just as WinForms added a managed code aspect to Win32 programming, ASP.NET has added a similar capability to its predecessor, ASP. While ASP.NET applications definitely offer client reach for enterprise applications beyond any previous technology, the end user experience can still often be, well, a bit clunky. And with full page refreshes and less than stellar widgets and UI gesture capabilities, let's just say applications can tend to favor function over form. Enter AJAX, asynchronous Java and XML. Suddenly, the web world seemed a little brighter, and AJAX quickly became a key part of what we consider a Web 2.0 experience today. The roots of AJAX are embedded in technology that was introduced in Internet Explorer 5 in 1999, yet it took some time before this out-of-band server communications pipe was explored to the extent it is today. AJAX has been available in ASP.NET since 2.0, but libraries were just formally incorporated into the framework with the 3.5 release. Recently as well, Microsoft announced that it will incorporate the popular jQuery JavaScript library into versions of Visual Studio going forward. ASP.NET and AJAX is currently the option for building web applications with the .NET framework. However, it's not without its critics. The ASP.NET WebForms event model was initially created to provide a coding experience similar to that for event-driven client applications. However, in comparison to other tools such as Ruby on Rails, the paradigm can seem clunky to some, notably those whose programming roots do not include client-server applications. And while there is a rich set of controls in ASP.NET, the use of ViewState and other black box techniques has drawn additional criticism from some segments of the developer base. To address these concerns, the ASP.NET MVC Model View Controller project was born and continues to be under development with strong community involvement. MVC is a lean approach to developing web applications and leaves all view rendering up to the developer. No more page event model, no more view state. Of course, by doing so, you give up the infrastructure and ecosystem around web forms, but that will eventually reform around MVC as well. ASP.NET MVC is currently in preview release 5 and can be downloaded from CodePlex. Some of the foundations of the MVC implementation are already part of the 3.5 SP1.NET framework proper, including the system.web.routing namespace used to implement URL routing to page controllers in the MVC model. Despite the advances in ASP.NET and browser capabilities in general, there's still a usability gap between web applications and thick or smart client applications. Latency and performance tend to be less predictable, the UI gestures, drag and drop, and keyboard interfaces, for instance, aren't as rich, and the implementation nuances across browsers and versions can make applications behave with slight differences, or even not at all, the burden of which, by the way, is assumed by the developer, making his or her job n times as hard. These are the deficiencies that rich internet, or rich interactive applications, RIAs, are poised to address, and that's where Silverlight comes in. Silverlight is a cross-browser, cross-platform plugin, with a footprint of just under 5 megabytes, including the subset of the .NET framework that supports its operations. It comes with browser support for IE, Firefox, and Safari, and platform support for the PC and Mac, with the Novell-sponsored Mono project working on a port for Linux called Moonlight. Version 1 was focused on delivering rich interactive media, such as video delivery over the web. There weren't any widgets with which to build business-type applications. Additionally, JavaScript program was required to drive dynamic behaviors and event handling. With version 2 comes a new world of possibilities, support for the common and dynamic language runtimes, control libraries and templates, and data binding have been added. Silverlight applications are true browser applications, so run in a sandbox, but with some capabilities not usually associated with that restricted environment, such as the file open dialog enabling access to files on the local machine, the ability to open a socket, communication with cross-domain services, and isolated storage on the client. Since Silverlight applications are browser applications, they can interact with the browser document object model, and you can use JavaScript to interact with the managed code. Finally, deep zoom capabilities, as exemplified on the Hard Rock Cafe's memorabilia website, add another dimension to the user experience by providing a seemingly infinite pan and zoom capability with high-resolution images. From the developer's perspective, with Silverlight you can use the XAML-based programming model supported by Visual Studio and Expression Blend, just as you do with WPF programming. In fact, Silverlight's codename was WPF/E or WPF Everywhere, so you can expect to leverage many of the same design and development skills across either programming model, WPF or Silverlight, like data templates, styles, and event handling. So what about XBAP? XAML browser applications are another way to distribute a WPF experience, and the technology straddles the line between browser and smart client. XBAPs are deployed via click once and require the complete .NET framework as a prerequisite on the end user's machine, like a smart client application. However, XBAP runs in the context of a sandbox within the browser. Here, only IE and Firefox are supported. XBAP applications receive some negative reviews upon their introduction due to security conflicts when trying to use WCF, slow start time, and lack of support for Firefox. These are all issues that have been resolved with or before the release of the .NET 3.5 SP1 release. XBAPs are seen as somewhat of a niche player, however. The requirement of the .NET framework on the client machine and the lack of support for Mac or browsers other than Firefox and IE make it a more appropriate option for internal or intranet applications, where client configurations can be more easily controlled. That quickly leads to the question of why you wouldn't just use a WPF smart client in those environments, since the client requirements are the same. Click once is used regardless, and a full WPF client wouldn't have the security restrictions. XBAP may, however, be a reasonable approach for interactive applications you access rarely, such as for an annual performance review, for example. As opposed to a smart client application that is installed on the local machine, an XBAP is retained only in the browser cache and so would not indefinitely retain system resources for a rarely used application.
Another reason XBAT may fit the bill is one of policy versus technology. Here I'm referring to the case where there's a mandate that every application be delivered via the web. XBAT definitely supports that, and additionally gives the developer more options and the end user a better experience than ASP.NET. As Silverlight matures, however, I would expect the domain space for which XBAPs are ideal to shrink further. However, for now, XBAP still retains a distinct, yet narrowing, domain of applicability. And what about mobile applications? Are they browser-based or are they smart client-based? Well, with the presence of the .NET Compact framework, you can consider Windows Mobile platform to be a constrained desktop. The constraints, of course, provide obvious challenges in terms of resources like memory and battery life. The Compact framework is also a subset of what's available for WPF and Windows forms on the desktop. Note, WPF is specifically not supported on the Compact framework. Add to that the fact that screen real estate is reduced, navigation options differ, retaining network connectivity is a challenge, and a wide variety of devices and vendors exhibit their own nuances of behavior and capabilities. Despite these constraints, both smart client and web options are equally viable for mobile development. In terms of ASP.NET specifically, you may have noticed in Visual Studio 2008 that there is no longer a mobile web page template. Some have interpreted this as a de-emphasis of mobile solutions for the web. However, that's really an incorrect assumption, and its removal is really more in line with moving away from specializations for Wireless Application Protocol, or WAP, browsers to targeting standards-based and rich browsers on mobile devices, in which case the standard ASP.NET projects fit the bill. Additionally, at MixOS 8, Microsoft announced future support for Silverlight on Windows Mobile and Nokia. We've talked quite a bit about the various individual client options. Now let's spend a little time on how to approach the development task once you've decided upon your client model. That's where the concept of software factories comes in. To eliminate your having to reinvent the wheel each time you build an application, software factories are designed to provide a set of software and documentation assets to assist developers in building complex, extensible, and testable applications predictably and efficiently. Software factories also typically address a certain type of implementation, for instance, web applications or mobile applications. At Microsoft, the responsibility for software factories lies with the Patterns and Practices Group, which handles the development of reusable application blocks, reference implementations, and guides in the form of documentation and quick starts. Software factories actually may include some or all of these assets. Currently, there are 4 software factories focusing, respectively, on smart client applications, web applications, services, including WCF and ASP.NET, and mobile development. The Mobile Client Software Factory, while still available, bears an archive notice on MSDN. The current guidance on mobile development is actually incorporated into the Windows Mobile Line of Business Solutions Accelerator, which you can access on the Microsoft site. Each of these 4 factories has its own dedicated CodePlex site for community involvement, including a contrib project where interested parties can post extensions and tools for working with the various factories. New to the offerings here is guidance for building WPF applications via the recently released Composite Application Guidance for WPF, also known by its code name of PRISM. PRISM isn't really a software factory per se, but a set of guidelines for developing WPF composite applications. A composite application is one that is constructed of loosely coupled dynamic modules that are actually assembled at runtime. For smaller applications, it may be overkill, but for a large application, such as an ERP, loose coupling is key to being able to partition code for effective development and testing. It's much the same theme that pervades the development of distributed services via SOA, or service-oriented architecture. The Composite Application Guidance for WPF addresses similar concerns as the Smart Client Software Factory, but is a somewhat lighter implementation of the Composite Application UI Block, or CAB, that figures prominently in that factory. It includes the stock trader reference implementation, a composite application library, and quick start applications, designed to be about 5 or 10 minutes hands-on experiences with a facet of the guidance, versus the perhaps overwhelming at first reference implementation. And of course, there's technical and design documentation as well. The current incarnation of PRISM is focused on WPF, so it's a fair question to ask, what about Silverlight? A recent blog posting from the Patterns and Practices team shed some light on that. The next version of PRISM will extend the effort to support the construction of composite Silverlight applications, as well as to provide guidance for building multi-headed applications, applications that provide both a browser and a desktop experience. This is an ongoing effort, and Drop 5 of PRISM version 2 was made available in early November on the Composite WPF project located on CodePlex. Since many of you may be on the verge of or just recently adopting WPF and Silverlight for your own development efforts, this is definitely the right time to tap into those resources. And with that, we've reached the end of this presentation. To revisit the opening theme, here's hoping that the information we just discussed makes this picture a bit more representative of your experiences when navigating the maze of options than what we saw in the opening slide. Thanks for watching, and have a great rest of your day.